At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Want to talk about a new movie? Check. Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network, hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
Pulse FM and the Studio DNA Podcast Network present What Else with Corey Mann. Hit subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or visit the archives on Apple, Spotify, or Google Play. Part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
Hello? I'm so excited to meet you. My manager, Lot, has just kept saying how wonderful you are over and over and over. So I've been excited.
I don't want to be afraid every time I face the waves. I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be afraid. And I don't want to fear the storm just because I hear it roar. I don't want to fear the storm. I don't want to fear the storm.
My boss came up and spoke to me about 2 months ago, and he said, I can't believe more artists weren't using this pandemic to be creative and unleash the creative fury. And I read that you are the person that did just that during a pandemic, your first big record.
Yep, I did make a record in the middle of a pandemic. So I don't know what that says about me. I don't know if that means I'm crazy, if I was just being led by the Lord. I'm not really exactly sure, but either way, I'm really glad that we were able to finish it because it was challenging. It wasn't like it was the easiest process. I'm really grateful for it. And for me, most people don't know my story, but I'm not a young whippersnapper. I turned 40 this year, and this has been a long journey for me, about 20 years of going on a journey with God, and twice stepping out thinking I was going to pursue music and make a record, and twice God saying, that's not my plan. And having to surrender that dream and walk away from it and lay it down and choose the presence of God over the passion of my heart. And it was worth it every time. And so the fact that I even made a record is such a personal, it's such a significant thing for me personally. So yeah, it's been crazy.
You moved to Nashville from where?
I was born in Kentucky. a tiny, tiny, tiny little town. And then we kind of moved all over. My dad was in ministry when I was a young kid, but then we landed in another town called Hopkinsville, Kentucky for most of my childhood. Then I, through a series of events, moved to Louisiana for a little bit, went to LSU for a couple of semesters, and then landed in Nashville 20 years ago because I got wrecked by Jesus. I was 19, attended a church service here the summer that I turned 19. I got wrecked by Jesus. I had known Jesus prior to that. I'd grown up in a faith-filled home. I'd prayed the prayer of salvation at about 5 or 6, but I had not made Jesus Lord of my life. I understood who he was as a savior. I had no idea who he was as a Lord, as someone that you live your life to honor and that you surrender your thoughts, your feelings, your desires, your dreams. That took root at 19. And I was so unbelievably wrecked by Jesus that I packed my little Honda Accord, my 1980, what was it? It was like a 1988 Honda Accord. It's gray, 4-door, and moved to Nashville because I was just like, I want to know how to love Jesus. I want to be in a community where they love Jesus and they look and they smell and they act like Jesus. And not that I hadn't encountered that in previous seasons, but this was just so marking. And so that was 20 years ago, and I'm still here, and I'm still just committed to, I want to love Jesus, and how do I love Jesus more? And hopefully that, you know, spills out into everything that I do as a wife, mother, songwriter, worship leader, friend, mentor, pastor. That journey really short.
LSU.
LSU.
Are you a college football fan? Did you experience the life at LSU?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been to all like the games in Death Valley. Like, yes. But the thing is, this is what's crazy. So my younger brother graduated from LSU. My middle brother, I have two younger brothers. The middle one, he graduated from Louisiana College in Louisiana. And they are all like crazy, avid college football fans. I mean, my mom, they're all like, and I like football, but we don't really watch it. So my family gives me a really hard time if I wear an LSU sweatshirt. They're like, you're not a true fan. I'm like, I actually went to LSU. Like I can always wear this sweatshirt, whether I watch the games or not. But yeah, I'm an embarrassment to them that I couldn't tell you like who's playing. I couldn't even tell you who's coach right now. They're just like, you are a shame. You are a black spot on our family lineage because you don't know more.
You want to go back?
You know, I thought about going back. And if I were to go back, I would not major in what I had majored in.
Which was?
Music. I was like a music student, which made no sense really for me at LSU because there was kind of two paths. Like you could go down the opera like vein because they didn't have a commercial music department, or you could go down like more the education path to teach, which was part of why I ended up dropping out. It was on the heels of what I was talking about earlier when I was 19, had this radical encounter with Jesus. And I realized at that point, like I needed to make an adjustment. I needed to either go back to school and major in something else, or I just wasn't really sure, but I just really wanted to go pursue Jesus. And my parents, I don't know why, they let me drop out of college and didn't make me go to college in Nashville, which is so funny because there's so many colleges here that have like a commercial music program. Belmont, Lipscomb, you know, there's so many different colleges and they didn't. And I've asked them before, I'm like, why didn't you like make me go to college? And they said, we just had this sense that there was a call on your life that was greater than a college degree. Mm. Like that wasn't going to be the thing that opened the doors for you. And so, you know, I legit went to college of like just life, you know? And so, yeah, if I could go back, I would major in interior design because I'd go get a business degree and like a graphic design so that I could use like programs like SCAD and all that stuff to be able to like design out like the floor plans of stuff and interior design because I really like that.
You're a 1980 baby.
That's right.
So does that mean you're a 90s music girl?
Well, I'm an 80s and 90s music girl. My dad was like, there was always music in our house. I got exposed to music very early on. So yeah, I'm in 80s and 90s.
What did dad listen to that you remember?
He really loved country. Garth Brooks and Alan Jackson, and even like older artists like Hank Williams Jr. and Hank Williams. And I don't know, like that was just kind of, but then we were also within church because my dad did church ministry. So I was also like exposed to like Rich Mullins and Amy Grant and the beginning of Michael W. Smith and Point of Grace and Trial of Paris. And then, you know, also huge in the 90s, then it was like Mariah Carey and Celine Dion and Annie Lennox. Oh, Annie Lennox and the Eurythmics. Oh, I got to see her. I thought I was going to lose my mind. And then the next day I was walking in downtown Nashville and I ran into her and I was with friends. And I'm not someone who, I can talk all day long if you can't tell by this interview. And I literally like went dry in my mouth, went white as a ghost, and I couldn't even say hello. I was so struck. And she was really kind and she's like, hello. Nice to meet you. And I just stood there like an idiot. Because I'm such a huge fan. She was so before her time. And still, I mean, she's still, her songs still stand the test of time.
Oh, that song, Why?
Oh.
Isn't that a good one?
How many times do I have to try to tell you that I'm sorry for the things I've done? Ooh. But when I start to try to tell,
I think I was drawn to her because she had this really big voice.
Yes.
But she could do so much with it. Where, like, you never got tired of hearing how she would be big and soft and different in every song. And I was always just mesmerized by her artistry and, like, her songwriting. And
you were a background singer back in the day.
Yeah.
For who?
For lots of people.
Let's name drop.
Okay, so I have sung backgrounds for Smokey Robinson one time. That was very interesting. I sang BGBs on tons of records. So like for Mercy Me, or the longest stint of background singing I did was for Natalie Grant. But I was her background singer and her tour manager for like, I don't know, 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And then I met my husband and he traveled all the time. And then obviously I was traveling all the time with Natalie, and we had opposite schedules. He was traveling Monday through Friday and I was traveling Thursday through Monday.
Oh my.
And we were like, well, someone's going to have to change jobs. And basically he made a lot more money than I did. So it naturally meant, and he had health insurance. So I was like, okay, well, I'll come off the road. And that was back in like 2006. My identity was so rooted in my gifts and my talents and my calling, or not my calling, but in my gifts and my talents, and thinking that my gifts and my talents were my calling versus understanding that as a believer, we all have the same calling. It's to love Jesus and make disciples and to make his name known. And I think oftentimes we get really confused and we think our giftings and our talents are our calling. And then we're disappointed when God doesn't glorify them or expose them or make them massive. And then suddenly we're like, well, what? I don't feel significant. I don't feel seen. I don't feel like God's made good on his promise. That's not true. Like some of us, our giftings and our callings are never going to be seen by people, but they're seen by Jesus. And I had to really allow God to deconstruct that. Because I ended up being on staff for over a decade. And then in 2013, I had two small children. I was on staff. I was traveling the country, leading worship for all these different conferences and different stuff, and decided to make a record at that time just to be able to like take as a product, like put on the table when I'm doing stuff. And at the top of 2013, I was 33, and I just kind of had a nervous breakdown because I was juggling two small children, two full-time jobs. My parents were going through an unexpected divorce. I was dealing with postpartum depression, and just all of life was like, it had been sitting there. And I think there had even been years of stuff that had happened along the way where I thought I had fully dealt with it, but hadn't completely. And I just kind of fell apart at the top of 2013. And I felt like God said, you know, Hope, you're saved and you love me, but you're not fully free. You're not actually living within the abundance that I've called you to live in your mind. Because I was still had so much, you know, I wasn't living in overt sin. I wasn't struggling with addiction. I was faithful to my husband. You know, it wasn't anything external. It was all internal that God was like, internally, you are still in bondage to anxiety, to fear, to insecurity, to not knowing that like what you do isn't who you are. And God began to take me on a deep, deep, deep journey from 2013 till now. And it was in that journey that again, God said, hey, I know you're making this project, but it's your plan. It's not my plan. And if you'll trust me, my plan is greater than yours, but it's going to mean that that money you just spent on this record, you're going to have to eat it. And you're going to have to be willing to not release this record if you really want what I want for your life. And trust me, that's not an easy thing to do, especially when your husband's looking at you and going, I'm sorry, what? We just spent all that money and now we're not going to put this record out. But he also knew like, that's a huge thing for someone. If you've carried that in your heart your whole life, and then you feel like God says no, to actually be obedient to that, my husband knew like that's costly to my heart. That's costly to me personally, but it's a cost I'm willing to pay because I don't want it if God's not in it. I don't want to do it if God's not in the thing, because then I have to sustain it. I have to promote it. I have to make it happen. And I don't want that because the truth is like, I'm not good enough for that. And my strength will fail me every single time. My plans will fail me. My goals will fail me, but Jesus's plans don't. And so I did it for the second time. I shelved a record and chose to spend the next basically 5 years. I quit my job. I stopped traveling. I came off staff and I said, okay, God, whatever it takes for me to be whole and healthy in you, that's all that I care about. If all that I ever do is have a healthy marriage and healthy children, and I serve the local church and I lay my life down, then that is a life worth living. And that is a life that is successful. I don't need to be seen in order to be known by you or to be validated by you. And that's a huge journey that I had to go on. And so you can only imagine that in this season, when God actually then began to say, hey, I want you to step out and now do this. There was a definite moment where I was like, I'm sorry. Is that you, Lord? I'm sorry. Could you say it again? Because I'm not so sure. But my husband had great wisdom. He looked at me and he said, Hope, the same obedience that it took to walk away from it twice is going to be the same obedience that's required for you to step into it in this season.
What is that? That sounds like a bear.
Hold on. Hey, go. This is real life. This is a real life podcast,
that
people.
That sounds like a giant bear.
Radio interview. Go. And he saw a deer in the backyard.
He's going to eat that deer.
He was.
I want you in your mind's eye to picture a visual of the United States of America.
Okay.
So you see the West Coast. You see Michigan. You see Florida. You see the East Coast, you see Wyoming, you see Texas.
Mm.
Now I want you to think of towers. They look like phone towers or electric towers all over there, all over the map, okay?
Okay.
Those are radio transmitters.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if your manager has helped you with the math on this, but right now, right now as we speak, your song is being played all over this country in the ballpark of 50 to 65 times a week, and people are hearing Peace Be Still in California and Florida and Indiana and yes, you've been around for a while, but to us, you come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
What's that like, knowing that if you get in the van in the next few minutes, you can turn on a Nashville station and more than likely you will hear your song? What's that like?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely happened. You know, I think there's two things that I think every time I hear it. One, the awe of it, the wonder of it is I don't think it'll ever wear off. Like I definitely see it and I'm just like gobsmacked. Like, that's just cool. That's just really cool because there are people that their entire lives, they're artists, their entire lives, they do this and they never have that moment happen. And so I don't take that for granted. I don't take that lightly that God has made space for this song at this moment in time. But I also look at it and just so reminds me of God's perfect timing and that God knew exactly what he was doing in this journey. This song is not a new song for me. I wrote the song 4 years ago, but in 2018, end of it, and then all of 2019, as God really just began to speak to my heart, he's like, the message of this song is meant for greater territory. And I couldn't fathom that. I didn't understand what that meant because in my mind, what the live version had done for our church was massive to me. I'm not a person who's been writing songs for 20 years. I've been writing songs for 5 years. Like, this is not like this has been what I set out to do. And so I was already in this place of like, God, this has done more than I ever dreamed. How in the world could it have more territory? And I just remember Mia Fields, my co-writer, she called me one day and she said, I know that I know that I know God has called you to take this song to somewhere else. And I was like, Mia, that doesn't make sense. I'm not an artist. I'm not even a signed songwriter. Like, what are you talking about? And she goes, I just can't shake it. She goes, step out in faith. And it took me about 10 months to still step out in faith, if I'm being honest. It was a wrestle for me. And I remember just recording it and just being like, okay, God, we're going to go make a shorter version and we're going to believe that you're going to make space for it. I don't know where that is, but part of us hoped that it would get into radio because we knew that was a territory it had never been in. And we knew that it was a territory that would go further than what we had even seen yet, but it still didn't make sense in the natural. And yet here we are a year and a half later and God did what we felt in our spirits. But I love that God knew this song was supposed to come out when it came out on radio. Cause it's so timely. Like, we wrote this song to literally attack fear and disappointment and anxiety and insecurity and worry that was attacking us in that season. We were grabbing hold to a promise of God's peace because we didn't feel peace. And so we literally made a decision in the room that day that said, we're going to write a song that actually moves us in the opposite spirit of what we're facing and what we're feeling. And I love, there's this quote that says, when you write songs out of encounter and revelation, you lock up the encounter and revelation in that song. And when that song is released to people, they too are allowed to have that same encounter and that same revelation.
Wow.
And I believe without a shadow of a doubt that this song was meant for this moment in time because it was written from a place of encounter and revelation. It was written from a place of, I'm going to do damage to the spirit of fear right now with the promise of God's peace and the authority that Jesus has over our lives and over what we're facing. And so I think that is why God was like, there is a moment in the future that you cannot see that I have designed this song to come out at that moment so that people can experience my peace in the midst of what is a worldwide moment of people dealing with fear and stress and anxiety and having to remind people like, our God is actually greater than anything you are feeling right now. And he speaks peace over whatever it is that you're dealing with. If it's a loss of a job, if it's sickness, if it's a marriage that's struggling, if it's a kid that is struggling, if it's your mind that's, you know, dealing with anxiety or depression or whatever it is, there is actually something greater than that, which is Jesus Christ. And he actually has promises that he comes into those situations and speaks and breathes peace over you. And so I'm grateful. I'm so grateful that the song is out right now because it allows us to remember that even in these moments, when we put our trust in Jesus, it doesn't fail us. And it's worth us digging in and saying, okay, God, I trust you even here right now in the midst of this moment. Mm.
Hope Dars, you have been a delight. My only prayer for you is that you break free from your introvertism.
You've been listening to What Else with Corey Mann, part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Production elements and voiceovers by audiblegenesis.com. Find complete podcast tools and production at audiblegenesis.com. Find this podcast and older episodes on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Leave a comment or review, tell a friend, and thank you for listening.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.